Hello there. You're listening to the No Code SaaS podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about building software and software as a service specifically without having to be a programmer. So building it with tools like Bubble. I am James, and I'm building an app called UserLoop, which is a customer feedback app for Shopify. And I've got here with me Kieran.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kieran, and I'm building Yep.so, which is a super fast landing page builder for testing and validating business ideas, also in Bubble.
Awesome. So we've got a couple of updates this week. So there is some news with the Bubble platform that we're going to talk about in a bit that's come out in the last week. But first of all, I think, Kieran, it'd be great to talk a little bit about this freelance job platform that you've been working on, because I've been seeing you tweet about that. So I'd love to hear how that's going and how it came about, really.
Yeah, so I've been freelancing full time since last November, so coming up to a year, and I realized that it's like the main source of income for my family, but I'm totally disorganized about it. I don't have a portfolio. I don't collect testimonials from clients. There's some months where I have like loads of people asking me if I've got any capacity, and I'd have to say no. And there's other months where I have no one asking me, and I've got no work, no money coming in. So, and I think it's a bit like that for everyone. So I thought, well, it would be really useful to have like a centralized place to list Bubble freelancers. And often I find that when I'm too busy and I get people contacting me saying, do you know any freelancers, it takes me, I have to go through and try and find their Twitter handles, and then it just takes a long time, and I'm like trying to recommend people and I don't know if they're available. So I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to have a site where you could have like a simple profile and you could just say if you're available or not available, and you can also have a list of like your preferred other freelancers that you would recommend, and then people can just go straight to your page and then straight to the people you recommend, and it would let the people know that that's where the lead came from, like Kieran sent you this lead. And then in the future, maybe there'll be something like, you know, some kind of finder's fee or something like that. But I just thought that'd be cool. And, you know, not too difficult to build in Bubble. I asked a few Bubble devs what they thought about it, and they all seemed keen. And then I did a tweet with a Yep landing page for it, and it got, it got a fair amount of signups, like 40 or 50. Within the first day. So that's pretty good. So yeah, I think it's something that could be useful. And I know it's not at all exciting. It's not a SaaS, and it's, you know, not very novel, but I think it is something that's needed.
Absolutely. It's something that you're kind of seeing more and more of. I mean, at the moment, the main way of finding Bubble developers, it seems, is either the forum or Twitter. Like, they're the only two ways that I've seen, really, with lots and lots of people on. And often then, yeah, that they won't, you know, won't have a portfolio or a list of projects they've worked on or any information about what their strengths are with Bubble. So I think, it, you know, having a really quick and easy way to fill that out would be awesome. Because, yeah, I mean, I've also, like you've been doing some freelance stuff lately, and I don't have anything posted anywhere about anything that I've been doing. So I'll definitely be signing up for it and using it. But yeah, I think it's a great use case. And I imagine you can also apply a lot of what you've already done with Yep to that as well, because there's a lot of similarities in functionality, I imagine, between them.
Yeah, it's really similar. And yeah, there's a few other projects I built which are also very similar. In fact, I did my Become a No-Code SaaS Founder course. I built a product very similar to this and then taught people how to do it. So yeah, there's not that much I'm needing to learn along the way, which is, you know, both good and bad, but it's making it quicker. And I'm also using the Basis UI kit, which is massively speeding up everything. So that's been great. But even so, it is taking me longer than I would have expected. Maybe I'm just a bit too finicky about the small details these days, or like building in little features. Like, I wanted it to be only people who are already on the platform can invite other freelancers, because I don't want it to just be like suddenly full of kind of unknown people. So it's like going to be invite only. So building that in, you know, took a bit of time. And I want you to be able to like have a page you can send to your clients to say, please leave me a testimonial. And then they would have to like verify their email address or something to in order to save that testimonial. So little things like that make it a bit more technically interesting. But yeah, I mean, I do think it's needed, because at the moment it's great that there's like a lot of demand for bubble devs, but in the future there'll be a point where there's, you know, the demand supply evens out and there'll be plenty of bubble devs to go around, and then you'll be like, oh, I wish I had a portfolio and I wish I had some testimonials from my clients now.
Absolutely. And things like the bubble certification that came out recently, I guess, is going to help elevate the whole kind of freelancer scene, you know, and help you evaluate more, you know, what someone's skills are. Have you taken that yet, that exam?
No, I haven't. I want to, but I keep putting it off, because apparently it takes like between 2 and 4 hours, and there's never a time when I think, oh, I've got 2 or 4 hours to spend doing something like that. Well, there hasn't been, but hopefully there will be in the future. So I do really want to do it, but also I'm nervous about failing, because a lot of really good bubble devs failed it first try. So
yeah, I've heard it's very, very hard. So I guess it's kind of good in one way that it's setting a bar, but yeah, probably a lot of research and kind of revision needed before you take it, because the platform itself is changing so much all the time. It is quite hard to keep up to date with it. But I mean, one thing I have noticed is the documentation is really coming along leaps and bounds lately. It was, I think, Peter Amley's been improving them. I saw just this week, I think there was a big update on the security section in there.
Okay.
I've got to go and read through. But yeah, the updates so far have been really, really a big improvement over what was there before. But I think this time last year, the documentation for Bubble was kind of split over two things. There was like the reference, and then there was like the actual documentation, and it was kind of weird. Some stuff was in one and some was in the other. And it's all in that one kind of master thing now. So it's definitely a lot better. And the quality of it as well is way, way better. So
yeah,
lots of revision material.
He's such a good writer. He's very good at explaining complex things very simply. I've got his ebook about like bubble security best practices, and that's really good. One thing I discovered today, a little security tip, which maybe you already knew about, is that if you've deleted field types in your database, all that information is still there and cannot be protected by privacy rules, apparently, because it's no longer in the privacy rules interface because it's a deleted field. But So yeah, people who know how can somehow access that data. And the way to solve that is you need to use the optimize app function, which is like down the bottom of the general tab in settings. And you will see in there a list of your deleted data types, and you need to then click optimize, and it will get rid of that data once and for all. But until you've done that, and I think not many people do ever use that, until you've done that, then all your deleted data is like publicly visible.
Yeah, I mean, I've used the optimized thing once or twice. I mean, I personally found it was a bit too keen to delete things that you're actually using. So, and it was quite hard to go through and select, mass unselect things. But certainly for the data types, yeah, I think that is worth people going in and sorting that out and getting rid of them. I imagine there's probably some kind of performance improvements as well, just by clearing out stuff you're not using in your app, like data types and other things. But yeah, styles, quite rarely I would want to delete those, to be honest, because if you're not using them on one page, you may want to use them again on another. So I didn't find the ability to clear out those styles super useful, really. But definitely for data types, I should probably maybe make that the default, that it is just, you know, once you delete it from the main data structure screen, it should just go after that without any further steps required, really, because I think that's what most people's kind of expected behavior is of what is happening there is.
Yeah, or at least have like a recycle bin kind of thing, like 14 days and then it's permanently deleted automatically. But otherwise, yeah, it's just hanging around there forever.
Absolutely. So we could move on to the next topic on the list, which is, I think, about Flutterflow. And I think you'd seen some interesting content around some people who'd worked on both Flutterflow and Bubble, and what your thoughts on that were.
Yeah, I've just been, you know, watching some YouTube videos. There's a guy who's, I think it's called James No Code on YouTube, and he used to be a Bubble developer. He used to make videos all about Bubble, like quite complex stuff. I think his background is that he's actually a developer, so he's good with all the complex stuff. And then he switched over to Flutterflow a couple of years ago and hasn't really looked back. And so he made a video that was like going back to Bubble after 2 years of using Flutterflow and like his general impressions of it. But yeah, from the sounds of it, he's a big fan of Flutterflow. Yeah, so the impression I get from what he says is like, number one, it's way better for mobile apps than Bubble, but you know, it depends if you want to make mobile apps. But also you can export the code, which is obviously a big deal. And do you think that Bubble will ever get to a point where you'll be able to like export the code, or is it just too proprietary Bubble?
I can't see it getting to a point where you'll be able to export it in a useful way. Obviously, there is this kind of bizarre thing at the moment where you can export your application as this kind of gigantic blob of JSON, which represents everything that your app does, but you can't actually use it in any other platform. But what I could see becoming possible is some GPT model that was trained on Bubble specifically, maybe being able to reinterpret that JSON output from Bubble and turn your app into, you know, Cloudflare workers and things like do a kind of a complete transformation of it. But I can't see ever being able to export from Bubble and just being able to run it somewhere else. You know, the only kind of edge case that I've seen Bubble talk about is they have this document that you can get from the forum, I think, which explains Bubble for investors. And in there, it says that if Bubble ever did go out of business, they kind of committed to open source the Bubble engine so that you could run your own app in theory. Obviously, that's kind of a worst case scenario type thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a big difference between Bubble and these other platforms that do allow you to export some kind of code that you can run yourself.
Yeah, and it takes us back to the whole platform risk discussion, which, you know, it's a very tricky one. And sometimes I do think, yeah, it would be great to be able to build something in a platform, then export all the code and use it elsewhere. But in order to do that, you are then going down the route of needing to understand a lot of that stuff and like understand the code. And then, so yeah, I think it's, this guy on YouTube is formerly a coder, so it's kind of easy for him to say, yeah, you can export it and deploy it elsewhere. But for someone like me, I don't know, that sounds a lot harder than, you know, it's anything I've done before, and could potentially take me down the wrong, like a path that I've tried to go down before and haven't been successful with. So not that I'm against like learning it, and I'm sure, as with everything, it's easier than it seems, but still you would lose a lot of the benefits of no code. And I think, so when I tweeted like, has any Bubbler used Flutterflow, a few people replied, and some of them were like, one of them said it gave him an appreciation for how easy things are in Bubble, because a lot of that stuff just takes longer, or you need to use code in Flutterflow. So yeah, I think we, you know, have to remember that we are leaning into the fact that we can build very quickly, and that's one of our main advantages, and just double down on that, really.
Definitely. And that may kind of tie us into the next topic that we were going to talk about, actually, which is, you know, when your application does grow to a certain point, so you've kind of got an app that's really starting to take off, what do you do then? Do you stay on Bubble, or do you kind of move it off to code? And I think Bubble, you know, have always been very public in what they've said is their ambition is to have you go from MVP to massive scale and stay on Bubble. That's their ultimate kind of wish and goal. And I think this announcement that came out this week moves them a little bit in that direction, in the right direction, I think. So it was the SOC2 compliance that they finally and full GDPR compliance. You know, for an indie hacker, this might not be something that you think about very often. And I certainly didn't really think about it when I first started building my app. But it's definitely something that comes up when you start getting more paying customers, particularly kind of medium, larger customers will typically ask you about your own compliance for SOC2 in particular. So it's great to see Bubble supporting that on the platform and also moving to have this enterprise tier of the product where you can decide which AWS region your Bubble instance is hosted in and have managed updates and more support and things like that. So overall, I think it's great news to see Bubble supporting startups that are later down the funnel and I guess larger enterprises that might want to use it as well. Notably, I didn't see any pricing announced alongside any of that for this new enterprise tier. So we don't really know much about that right now. But it's good to have more options and to have, you know, the ability to have your own version of Bubble and have SOC2, things like that. You know, ultimately, I think it'll be good for the ecosystem.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, obviously, it depends what you're doing with Bubble. But like, from my perspective, all this stuff doesn't really affect certainly the SaaS products I'm trying to build, because my goal is to build, you know, a lifestyle type micro SaaS business. I don't particularly want to get investment. I definitely don't want to get VC investment. I don't want to sell to like governments or big corporates where they need like ISO 27001. I just don't want to go down those routes. I've done some of that stuff before and I just did not enjoy it. But there will be plenty of people who do want to do that, who this will be very relevant for. And also as a freelancer, this is obviously going to attract bigger clients to Bubble who will then hire freelancers like you or me. So that's really good for the ecosystem to be able to say it has these things. It's just going to make Bubble more of a legitimate option for all of these big companies. So I think that's, yeah, it's definitely a great thing anytime they, you know, go down these routes of formalizing more, as long as they don't end up selling to Microsoft or something like that.
Yeah, I think I saw a couple of comments on Twitter. I think everyone's getting increasingly kind of, it seems that the signs are moving in that direction, that, you know, it's looking like Bubble may kind of have this a bigger exit to primarily Microsoft. I can't really see there being many others there would be. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I guess the dynamics have changed quite a bit since that, you know, the very large rounds of funding that they secured. So that will have kind of put them on a bit of an inevitable path, really, I guess, towards either an acquisition. An IPO kind of looks a bit further away to me at the moment. So yeah, it'd be interesting to follow that and see what happens. But overall, I think it's a great update and a great thing for the ecosystem. More bigger clients coming in, more bigger applications, you know, that means better plugins, better support, better content around Bubble. So that's great for everyone. A couple of other things that we've seen that are new in Bubble that we haven't actually spoken about on previous episodes. Well, the first of which is the new table elements, which is out in beta now, which I think we've both had a play with. I haven't actually used it in any production app yet. I've stuck with repeating groups so far. I couldn't find a use case where the tables made more sense for me. But yeah, have you had any experience with them yet, Kieran?
Yeah, I've tried it out and I found that it was in its current state is just too limited. Like, definitely when you drop it onto the page, it looks like a table immediately. It looks nice. Whereas if you try to do that with a repeating group, it would take you 20 minutes or something to make it look okay. And also, I think you can do like little kind of group focus drop downs from individual elements within the repeating group without having to make it a reusable element as you have to do in a repeating group at the moment. So it's got these nice little things which are just a bit easier than using a repeating group. But currently, I think it lacks a lot of the flexibility with a repeating group, like pagination. With repeating groups, pagination is like really easy because there's actually a workflow action where you can just say go to the next page of the repeating group and it'll or just do it. And it's, yes, super simple. Tables, I think you just have to have one massive, like, lazy loading table, which is usually not what I want. So I have been avoiding them. And I saw, yeah, there was a, I'm in a WhatsApp group with Tass Tiplister, and someone was complaining about tables, and he was like, yeah, I don't use any of Bubble's features until they've been out for at least a year, because if they're, as soon as they come out, they're still like in a really early stage, and it's just not even worth using them, and you got to wait for a year before you even think about using them. Yeah, I think he's probably wise to go with that. So yeah, I've avoided them since then.
Definitely. I'm going to be interested to follow. And that's interesting what you say about the, you know, the group focus differences and things like that. That might actually make me more likely to use them in some instances. So one to follow, but yeah, it's still in beta. So I'm assuming there'll be more and more kind of improvements to it. The other thing that I'd seen quite a bit of discussion about was the new expression composer. So at the moment, I'm sure anyone who's building on Bubble has probably experienced this. When you're building like a conditional expression, you can't really change them after you've done them that much. So if you've got a really long expression and you need to go and like delete something in the middle of it, at the moment there has been no way of doing that. And so that has made me, you know, it opens up huge amounts of work sometimes when you've just want to change one simple thing in the middle of a long expression and you can't. So that's this new update from Bubble is out as an option that you can turn on that lets you kind of go into any point of the expression and edit it. I haven't actually turned it on myself, because I did read a few people on Twitter who turned it on and suddenly had like 100 errors in their application, and when they turned it off again, the errors didn't go away. So I think I'm waiting for that one to kind of get out of beta. But overall, it sounds like it's something that's sorely needed in the platform. So hopefully there have been, you know, some more iterations on that. But have you had a chance to try that yet, Kieran?
No, I've seen it. I've seen screenshots of it, and I've seen people talking about it. I literally just turned it on just as while you were talking on one of my apps. It hasn't created any more issues, thankfully, but yeah, it does look useful for sure, because I've had some situations where I've had like really long expressions and had to basically delete everything just to change one little thing and then screenshot it to remember what was there and then add it all back bit by bit, which is just a pain. So yeah, for sure, if it works, then it will be super useful. But yeah, again, bearing in mind those words of Tass, like, maybe wait a year before you switch it on.
Yeah, I'm definitely playing it safe with that one, given how many expressions I have in my app. So yeah, it'll be interesting to follow. There's a great thread on the forum, actually, with lots of updates that I've just been reading as well. So looks like it is getting more stable, especially if you've just turned it on and it, you know, it's been pretty bug-free. So that is good news. The only other thing I'm tracking, and probably everyone on Bubble has noticed over the last few weeks, is the responsiveness of the editor has been a little bit up and down. So just in the editor itself, sometimes clicking, you know, workflows and things like that, nothing happens and you need to refresh. So I'm guessing this is a symptom of all the changes that are happening behind the scenes. I think that, you know, there is quite fast iteration happening at the moment, which is probably leading to some kind of these kind of bugs. And of course, we did also have that quite significant outage last week where there was a long kind of debrief on what happened there. But overall, I thought the messaging around it was quite positive. And, you know, I think the platform sounds like it's maturing, and we should be expecting less of these over time. I mean, ultimately, I still love working with a platform like Bubble, because at the end of the day, those kind of platform issues, they're taken care of. I don't have to deal with it. I'm not there like rebooting servers and all this kind of stuff when you're managing your own stack. So overall, I was still kind of pretty happy with the way they handle it. And the debrief afterwards was pretty good. But yeah, did you have any thoughts around any of the stability, reliability issues recently?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of complaints. I haven't really noticed many issues myself. I did today notice on a couple of projects things were going slow, but they tended to be like really big, complicated apps where the editor was really going slow. And on other smaller projects, it was working fine. I know people probably think I'm like a blinkered Bubble fanboy, because I find it really hard to find negatives about it. I know I'm always quite surprised at some of the people who like use Bubble day in day out and then will like have 100 complaints about it, because I genuinely don't have many complaints at all, and it's not because I'm like getting paid to say it. I just don't have many complaints, but maybe that's just the kind of person I am. I don't know. But like, yeah, I've even when things are slow, I'm still quite, I don't get that annoyed. I'm quite forgiving. Like even if I have to reload my browser like a few times a day to get it a bit more snappy, I'm just like, that for me is the internet. Like it's always been like that, and I'm just used to it. I don't know what software people are using, especially browser-based software, where it's like consistently great. There's always issues, there's always bugs with everything I use, and when I try and think of the complexity behind Bubble, you know, it just blows my mind, like the amount of stuff it's doing. I was just thinking today, like the issue checker, can you imagine if the issue checker didn't exist, what it would be like building in Bubble? It would be like complete guesswork. Like change something and it's done, it's like affected like 50 different places in your app and you would never know about it, and then there's the issue checker just there like watching over your shoulder, like saying, hey, you forgot this, you forgot that. Like I don't even know how it works, and it's so fast as well. It's like, it's much faster than if you do an app-wide search for something. That takes quite a while, but the issue checker like instantly will say deleting that has like brought up 100 issues, you know, which I just think is amazing. Like how did they even build that? So yeah, I'm very grateful for the things it can do, and I'm quite forgiving for the stuff that goes wrong every now and then. But I know that not everyone is like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's remarkably bug-free and stable given what an unbelievably complex product it is. You know, I can't think of many other kind of app building platforms that must have the complexity that Bubble has, and that has, you know, has been around for such a long time as well. So there must have been constant kind of tech migrations happening in the background as well, which have all been pretty seamless. Like there's not been any kind of fatal incidents or anything like that, touch wood, on the platform that I know of. So, you know, it is a pretty good achievement. So yeah, overall, I think, you know, it enables us to do so much more. You definitely have to forgive the occasional blip here and there, but remarkably, there aren't that many really. So, you know, given what it does. So I think that's largely it for this week's update. We did quite a short episode this time. But yeah, any feedback you have at all, we'd love to hear from you on Twitter, or you can find our websites on our Twitter profiles and email us, I guess. Some people do, which is great. But yeah, anything else you'd like to add, Kieran?
Just that we should have been saying this all along because everyone else does, but like, yeah, if you like the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. Because the other day I found out my friend has his own podcast, which I'd never heard of, and I checked it out and he had like 3 5-star reviews, and I think we had like 0 or maybe 1, and I was like, oh, we need to be soliciting more reviews because then we'll get more listeners, and that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think we've got any reviews that I've seen. So yeah, if you do like it, that would be like mega, mega appreciated. Because yeah, it helps us keep doing them as well. Because it's always fun to talk about this stuff and hear from you if you're listening. So yeah, and we'd love to incorporate some of the topics you'd like us to talk about. So drop us a line. But yep, that's it for this week. There are some big events coming up next month. So we've got the big BubbleCon event in October, and we've got the NoCode conference in Paris, which me and Kieran is going to be at both of those. So we're going to try and land some interesting interviews, both of those for you. But yeah, I think that's it for this week. So yeah, goodbye.
Bye.